The following message is from Christ Community Church in Athens, Georgia. For more information and sermons, go to www.christ-community.com. Thank you for listening.
Good morning. Our reading this morning comes from John 1. That can be found on your worship guide, or feel free to turn there in your Bible. John says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, 'This is he of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks before me because he was before me. For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God, who is at the Father's side. He has made him known.'"
Well, good morning. Good to see everybody. Welcome to this gathering of Christ Community. Keep your Bibles open in John 1. We are beginning a series through the Gospel of John this morning. But before we get there, I do want to say welcome, particularly to those of you who are guests, whether this is your first time or the first couple of times that you have been with us. We're really glad that you're here. Just want to give you a heads up that if you are new to our church, maybe you have been here for a little bit and you've decided, I think this is my church, or you're just trying to settle in, or maybe you're just kind of looking around. Maybe you're looking around at Christianity. Maybe you're trying to figure out where you fit into. There's so many great churches here in Athens, and you're trying to find your home. I just want to give you a heads up that after the gathering today, we're going to have a little get-together for about 15 minutes for everybody who is new in our church. If you've never been to this event that we call Next, then I want to invite you to be part of that. It's going to be in this room right here next to our gathering space, and I'm going to basically share the story of our church and tell you a little bit about what we're up to. We're going to give you an opportunity to ask questions. Basically, what we're wanting to do is, if you're sitting looking at our church and going, okay, I think I kind of like this, I'm interested, what do I do next? We're going to answer that question for you. So would love for you to be a part of that, and just want to give you a heads up so that we're not dropping that on you a couple of minutes before we're done today. So would love for you to be part of that. Now, what I want to do is I want to pray, because we absolutely need God's help as we work our way through this beginning of John's gospel. And then we'll jump in and we'll see what God has for us. So Father, thank you for the men and women and children in this room right now. Thank you that nobody is here by accident. Thank you that you know every single person's story in this room. And we come and gather around this reality that we sang about in a Christmas song, that Word of the Father, now in flesh appearing. And because the reality of you, Jesus, and who you are and what you've done, may we in our listening, in our receiving, in our resting, may we adore you in these next few minutes together. We thank you for the beauty of your word and the power of your word and the reality of your word named Jesus. And it's in his name that we pray. Amen. All right, so let's start this way. Nick Saban and Rudy Giuliani walk into a bar. That is the punchline. So a few weeks ago, right before the season started, Nick Saban, that is a sports ball coach for some of us, He is talking to reporters whose job is, I think, to badger him, and they're asking about the depth chart. They're asking about who's going to play this position, who's going to do that, and his response to him, and he's more than a little annoyed, I think, at the people whose job it is to badger him. His response is, well, look, you can see what's written down as well as I can, but I don't know. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, I don't know if you can always trust in the written word. Okay. So then you have Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of New York City, personal lawyer to President Trump. And in his defense of President Trump and saying, I don't think he should actually testify to the special counsel's investigation, he said, well, I mean, the reality is that truth isn't truth. I mean, there are such things as alternative facts. Now, look, those two are pretty easy targets. There's not a lot of love for either or both of those men in this particular room, but it exposes a problem that exists in our hearts. And the problem goes something like this. Okay, so who can I trust? Because it does seem like our world is filled with fake news and fallen heroes. It's the reason why, if we don't feel this ourselves, we certainly hear it. It's certainly in the water of this city and the culture we live in that we're angry. We're angry because we see people lying to other people, and good people are believing those lies. Or we feel the shame of, I thought I could trust them. I thought I trusted their way of life. I trusted what they told me was true. And it seems like every single foundation and institution around us is crumbling, and so we feel vulnerable. It feels like ways of life are challenged. It feels like we even struggle to figure out what is right and what is wrong. And so it seems very, very difficult and complicated for us to trust anyone at all. And it even feels like hope itself is being challenged. Now, that's very real. It's also not very new. That there are seasons and moments throughout the course of history where you feel that, where it feels like things are getting darker and hope is being lost. This man, John, is writing into that particular moment for this particular group of people. John, and this is not the John that we see in verse 6 of the first chapter. John is Jesus' best friend. When Jesus walked the earth, he had a best friend, and his name was John, and it's the man who's writing to us here. John is now an older man, and he's writing to a church, and he's writing to a group of people that are losing hope. He's writing to a church, a group of people who are struggling to believe that life is good. In the same way that we framed it over the summer in Psalm 23, that there is a life. And it's a good life, because there's the belief that every single one of us can have, and that is that in any single moment, whatever is going on in my world, that I presently, right now, have everything that I need. And it's becoming difficult for these people to believe that, even though they believe in Jesus. So I know that some of us are familiar with John as an evangelistic tool. We use it to tell people that don't know Jesus about Jesus. But this is originally written to a church and people who had believed in Jesus but are struggling to keep on believing about Jesus, because they just like look around them like everything seems broken. They could look at the world around them. They could look at their own lives. They could see sickness. They could see poverty. They could see oppression. They could see the fact that they were now being oppressed by Jewish institutional authorities that didn't like what they believed about Jesus, and everybody is living under the shadow of the Roman Empire. So, you have this group of people that go, okay, so we believed in Jesus, but he's not here, and yes, we have his stories, and yes, we have his promises, but can we actually trust him? Can we really believe in him? Can we basically entrust our entire lives to him and believe that he is going to take care of us and make sure that we have everything that we need right now, regardless of what's happening around us? That sounds very contemporary. It sounds very much like our world. Well, we look around too and we see the brokenness of the world around us. We see sickness and we see poverty. We see oppression. We see it personally. We see it systemically. We understand that there are people who are oppressed and there are oppressors in this world. Some of us feel that. Some of us understand what it looks like and means to be in certain parts of a city or to be brand new to a city and feel the weight of this isn't the way that it's supposed to be. And we can come and we can cling to Jesus and we have his stories and we have his promises. But let's be honest, there are times when we wonder, okay, so are those stories true? Will he come through on his promises? Can I trust him? Should I believe in him? That gets us to John. And what John is writing to them and what he's saying to us is the very same thing. If you're a note taker, if you like clarity, then here's clarity in terms of what we're covering in the first 18 verses of John 1. You'll see this on the screen. It's this question. We're answering one single question. Why did John write his gospel? The gospel is a story of good news, and it was a genre very familiar to this original audience because it was used by kings. It was used by the Roman emperor to essentially say, these are the good things that I'm doing for the people in my kingdom. You should trust me. And so what John is doing here is he's writing a gospel. He is telling a story of good news about the world's true King Jesus and why you and I and anybody who ever comes across this story should trust Jesus. So the answer to the question, and I want to just unpack that answer, is the reason why John wrote his gospel is to help you believe in Jesus. The reason why I need to hear this morning, the reason you need to hear this morning is regardless of where you find yourself spiritually today, saying, I am a Christian, I'm not a Christian. I'm all in on Jesus, I'm pretty skeptical about him. Whoever you are and wherever you are, the reason John wrote this story is so that you might believe in Jesus. Now, when you get to the end of John's gospel in chapter 20, John says it. He just says, look, this is the reason I wrote this. In chapter 20, verse 31, he said, I wrote this so that you might believe, and in believing that you might have life. That same life that we talked about in Psalm 23. So that you might understand this limitless, lackless life that you have been given. That right now, in the midst of the brokenness, in the midst of what you don't have, you actually have everything that you need because you have Jesus. That's what's possible there. That's what he's inviting you into. And this is really what's there. What Christy just read in these first 18 verses, we call this the prologue, or what I like to call the Star Wars opening crawl to John's story. So some of you have never seen Star Wars before. We won't out you today, but I think everybody is familiar with how this goes. So there's the music that comes beforehand that, you know, my whole time growing up, I thought that was part of the Star Wars theme. No, that's the 20th Century Fox fanfare. You play that, and then it's all of a sudden, and a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it's John 1 in the beginning. It's like we're going back to Genesis, yes, but we're doing Star Wars. The opening crawl for all 8 episodes in Star Wars are just basically giving us the backstory and the context. It's the big picture, and that's what we're doing here. John 1, 1 to 18, it's the big picture. So what I want to do is I want to basically walk through and give you the big picture, just show you the movements of this, and then I want to summarize it for us, and then I want to just say, okay, look, now what do we do with this? How are we supposed to respond to this? As we put our eyes on this, as we use our brains, as we pray and hope that God would take information and allow it to seep into our souls, that we simply say open-handed, God, what do you want to do with me? What do you want to do with this? So look at this with me, beginning in verse 1. In verse 1 and 2, this is the first movement. It says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. So long time ago, in the beginning, there was the Word. And this is who John is writing about in this entire story. And what we're going to find out and discover is that the Word is Jesus. And what we see here in the first two verses is that the Word, Jesus, is God. And what we want to see here in this first movement is when you lose the conviction that Jesus is God, then everything good in this world loses its ultimate meaning. It's kind of a big deal. All right, look at verses 3 to 5. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So not only is the word divine, but this divine word is the one who created all things and is saving all things. And that work of salvation, that work of creation, is what John describes as life. And he illustrates that concept of life by saying, here is light. And what he is saying is that you can see that the light of God, the light of his word, shines on through the people of God called the church. That's what he's getting at in verses 3-5. All right, look at verse 6. We're introduced to John. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. Now, go ahead and just let me come right over here. This is not in the notes. So for a long time, I've said that John 1 feels like the only way that you can really get John is if you are, the same things that you need to get a Pink Floyd laser light show, it feels like you kind of need that in John 1 because the language is funky and we're talking about lights and life and the word. And it's just weird. Here's what we're saying. There's a guy named John. Now, this is a weird cat. In other stories about this guy, John, again, not the author of this gospel, but John, we find out he's Jesus' cousin. He lives in the woods. He's peculiar. But here's the greatness and the glory of God. God wants to be known so much that he uses people, dudes with ordinary names like John. And he uses him as an eyewitness to the reality and the brilliance of who he is as God. There are eyewitnesses. This isn't a fable. We're using the same things that we would use, using things like scientific methods, to be able to help people understand what's reality. And here's reality. There was a man named John, and he witnessed the light. And he witnessed the light and told people about that light because he wanted them to believe in the light. Verse 9. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. This is the Christmas story. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. So the Word, the light of the world, Jesus, comes into the world, and you would think that if God came to dwell with his people, that everybody would be blown away by that. But what we find is this is not just the ordinariness of what God did, but the brokenness of our own hearts, is that people didn't even notice him. Yeah, some people were upset and angry with him, but the vast majority of people who came into contact with Jesus weren't moved by him. They didn't even notice him. Not a lot of good news yet, but here's some good news starting in verse 12. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. So let's not think that everybody rejected Jesus. Some people didn't. Some people received him and welcomed him. They believed into his reality, into his name. And where it's good news for us is that it isn't because, and you can see this in verse 13, it isn't because of their family line. It isn't because of anything about their intelligence or goodness that the reason why people, why humans, why you and me become children of God is because of the grace of God, a God who comes to us and a God who brings us to himself. Verse 14. This is, some of us are so familiar with this, it's difficult for us to see how mind-blowing this is, right? And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. Glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. No other religion, and I'm using that word positively and hope that you'll take it positively, no other religion, no other system of belief that says there's something bigger than us that we press our life into, no other religion says God is so great that he's willing to become human. Every other religion says God is too great to become human. Only Christianity comes in and says God is so great that he is willing to come and be with us and become one of us. Verse 15, we go back to John again. John bore witness about him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks before me because he was before me.'" Again, this is the brilliance of God's design to a world that needs rest and hope and encouragement and conviction and direction and hope. He says, "I am going to speak. And I'm going to speak not only through the reality of Jesus, I'm going to bring the reality of Jesus into the reality of this world through people like you and me." And again, John's a strange guy. And so it isn't just that he even uses the best and the brightest. He uses ordinary, strange people like you and me, and he allows us to be part of what he's doing in this world. Verse 16. "And from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." So this is the witness of John's church. This is the "we" that's in verse 16. Here is a group of people that has experienced the love of God, who has experienced the brilliance and the grace and the mercy of God through the basics of the law, this rule of life that says this is how life works best. And then says on top of that, through that, beyond that, you see the exquisite righteousness of Jesus and what it looks like not only to be human in this world, but what it looks like for those of us who have messed that up, how we can be made right with God. And then to top it all off in verse 18, John says, "No one has ever seen God, and no one ever has." Not directly. We get glimpses of it in creation. We get glimpses of it in one another. We get glimpses of it in just one note in a piece of music. But no one has ever seen God directly. But John says, "The only God who is at the Father's side, he has made him known." We know what God is like most fully because we know who Jesus is. So let's get to know him. That's what's ahead of us. Now, that's a lot to take in. Some of you trying to take notes, your hand is cramped. So I want to just read a summary that I sent to Aaron and Ian as they were working on songs for this gathering. And just let me just read this through. And this would be the Star Wars crawl. So long time ago, the Word, take out Star Wars, the Word, and this is what the crawl would be. Okay, just let me read it to you. You take this in, and then we're going to talk about what in the world we do with this. Okay. "The Word has existed before the beginning of time," that's verses 1 and 2, "and since creation, the Word shines on like a light," verses 3 to 5. Here's John, verses 6 to 8, "who wants you to believe as you live in a world that has rejected the Word," verses 9 to 11. But here's some good news. You are invited to simply believe and become part of God's family, verses 12 and 13. Let me read that part of it again. This is where you hit pause on the crawl. You are invited to simply believe and to become part of God's family. Just so you know, the Word, God himself, moved into the neighborhood, verse 14. We saw him. We saw the glory, and so did John, verse 15, and all of us live off his gracious and generous gifts, verse 16, the basic staples of the law and the extravagant righteousness of Jesus, verse 17, God himself, who we can see as plain as day, verse 18. That's the big picture. That's the backstory. Now, what do you do with that? Maybe it comes down to something as simple as this. How do you honestly answer this question? Are you believing in Jesus? So you can look at verse 12 of John chapter 1. Put your eyeballs on that. This is actually, an inadequate translation of what we see in verses 12 and 13. So when you see that word belief, so verse 12 says, "But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name," that's actually a present active participle. So that word should read more like, not had believed, not like something in the past, but it should basically have the weight that we just put on it, which is right now, regardless of whether it would be for the first time or the next time, are you presently, actively believing in Jesus? Now, here's what I love about John, and this again is the reason why I think a lot of us use this evangelistically for people who don't know Jesus yet. John doesn't add adjectives and adverbs to believing. So there is this very real sense and weight that John is just offering us and encouraging us to simply believe. Some of us are jammed up right now about the nature of faith. And so when you read verse 12 and it says, look, to all who receive him, you just welcome him and let God do the work of believing. Let him be the one to build your faith and strengthen your faith. Because in order to believe, it does not require a wholehearted commitment or a complete surrender or a radical conviction about who Jesus is. John simply says, "I'll just believe." So are you doing that? And let's fight hard for a yes or a no. Because you and I both know that there are a lot of maybes. And I would if. But let's just allow ourselves the space right here in this room. And nobody's asking for who's a yes and who's a no. This is right now just with you and God. Are you believing Jesus? And what I love about what it says here is that it says, are you believing in his name? What does that mean? Does it mean that we need to just talk about Jesus and say, you know, just start talking about Jesus' name? Does it mean that we're just supposed to learn our theology proper and understand who God is and all that kind of stuff? And if we'll do that, that's the nature of belief. It's helpful, but what it means here is that we're believing into his name. We're believing into his reality. We are taking our entire lives and entrusting our life into his world, his kingdom, his reality. It becomes the place where we find rest. It becomes the perspective through which we see the world. It becomes the way that it shapes the life that we live. Are we believing into his reality? Now, I don't care whether you say yes or no. Well, I mean, I do care whether you say yes or no. But whether you say yes or no, your honest answer is going to lead you, if you're paying attention here, to the hope of God's grace. It can lead you somewhere else, but it doesn't have to. And I'm just going to go ahead and say, if you exit off the ramp too soon, you're going to be hurt and you're going to hurt other people. So allow your honest yes or your honest no, or if you can't get there and you're like, look, man, you can push on me all you want. I'm a maybe. Fine. You're an honest maybe. Your honest answer about belief, if you're paying attention to this, is going to lead you to the hope of God's grace. Look at verse 16. Verse 16 says, from the fullness of who Jesus is, we have received grace upon grace. And then he tells us where grace shows up. And he says grace shows up in the law of Moses. Grace shows up in the reality of Jesus. And that's confusing for some of us because some of us have heard that the law is bad. I want to reframe this a little bit because it doesn't make sense here textually, and it doesn't make sense in the way that the Bible's written. I understand why we do this sometimes, because oftentimes what we look at with the law is like, this is the things that I should do in order to get good with God. That's a bad thing because you can't do that. You'll never be good enough to be able to actually see that happen. If the law is what I do, it's very much contrasted with the good news that we call the gospel, which is about what God does. This is what Christianity is about. Not what you and I do, but what God has done for us. This is what's at the heart of the scriptures and what's at the heart of Christianity. It's unbelievably freeing and a massive relief. But these two are not enemies. This is not law against gospel. This is not about a rule of life versus the love and mercy of God. These things work together, and I think it makes sense. So if you have the law of Moses, this first five books in our Old Testament, that we summarize as saying, look, you were created by a loving God to love him with every fiber of your being, with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's what those first five books are about. It is about helping you understand in the world that God created, in a world in which the brokenness holistically of this world is being redeemed, bought back, and being renewed, that at the heart of that, one of the ways in which God renews and restores his world is you and I living a life that says there is a loving God, and so it makes perfect sense for me to love him with every fiber of my being. And then along comes Jesus, because that's still confusing, because you could read the first five books of the Old Testament, and you're going to find some things that are going to make you ask questions. There are some confusing cultural issues, and so it doesn't all come together. And even as we ask, okay, so what does it mean? What does it look like for me to love God with every fiber of my being? Jesus comes along and says, here's what it looks like. Primarily, it looks like you loving the people that God puts around you as much as you love yourself. And oh, by the way, that includes your enemies. So when you hear us as a church talk about becoming love, this is the work of our salvation. It is not just to make sure that we will spend eternity on the other side of heaven with God. That is an unbelievable promise, and it is an unbelievable reality, and it is a deep and abiding hope for those of us living in a broken world that there will be a world very much like this that has none of the brokenness and none of the sadness. But even now, we are working at our salvation, and we are becoming who we were created to be, and we were made to be loved. We were made to be lovers of God and lovers of people. And here is where the goodness and the grace of Jesus is both clarifying and empowering. The clarification is, and in the world in which we live in, and everybody's trying to figure out, what do? We love. Love who? Love God. How? You love people. Who? The people that God puts around you. Including my enemies? Yes, including your enemies. That's clarifying. I mean, think about this city and the way that we deal with right and wrong. Here's how we deal with right and wrong in the greater Athens area. Three marks. Number one, we have strong moral feelings. This is not a very apathetic town. We care deeply about things that matter to us. Those strong moral feelings, however, are also pretty relativistic. From a popular culture standpoint, you hear it this way. My truth. Your truth. You have your truth, I have my truth. From a more academic setting, we would say that, you know, the truth of the matter is that morality is pretty person-specific and culturally relative. Except for the fact that our morality seems so self-evident to us. Like, one of the reasons we get so angry and upset at people on the other side of an argument or topic or issue is because we look at the situation and go, how is this not obvious to you? And we do it on both sides. We can look at whatever issue that we're wrestling with. We can look at issues of, I don't know, gender equality, racial justice, economic justice. And we can look at this, and we can look at the other side, and we can look at what we're seeing and go, how do you not see this? What that creates in our passion and our relativism and in the self-evidence that we have about what's right and wrong is it creates a city that is noisy and incoherent and inconsistent. Except for what I believe, right? Makes perfect sense where I'm coming from, but everybody else, it's just a mess. So here is the gift of Christianity for this city. There are so many gifts, but we'll point out two that are here. The gifts that we see in verses 16 and 17. The clarifying grace that y'all, we were made by a loving God. And we have been made and we are being remade by him to become love. What this city needs, what we need, what they need, what everybody needs is a world in which people know they are loved by God and they express that love in a love for him that spills out and over into a love for anyone and everyone that we come into contact with, including the people that we disagree with, struggle with, don't see eye to eye with. That's clarifying. But it needs to be more than that. It isn't enough to have clarity. We have to have the ability to live that way because we can see it and we can see that gift of clarification, but you and I still struggle with this reality. The clarifying grace of Christianity walks into this world and says, there is a word. There is the truth. There are moral absolutes, and everybody runs for the hills, right? Because the only thing that we have seen throughout the course of human history has been that when you start talking in terms of absolutes, then people start hurting other people, and we want nothing to do with that. But I'm asking you to imagine the possibility of a non-oppressive absolute. And I'm not asking you to go ahead and settle that for yourself today if you're struggling with that. I'm saying come along for the ride. Because what I'm promising you is that as you walk through the story of Jesus, you are not going to find a relativist, but neither are you going to find a moralist. You are going to find someone, a man who we believe was God, and he is going to walk into the world and he is going to spend time with those who have been oppressed, and he is going to spend time with the oppressor. He is not going to allow people to hurt other people, but neither is he going to allow people who are ruining and hurting themselves to stay there. That's good news for us, but it's challenging for us because we are both moralists and relativists, depending on the issue. So we need the empowering grace of Jesus to help us get where we want to go. And here's where you find it. It's right in verse 14. The way that you and I become love, that we don't settle for moralism and using our rightness against other people. The way that we use and stand against relativism and said, it's not just my truth and your truth. We've got to get on the same page here. We're going to hurt each other and mess everything up. We look at verse 14 and we hear this. The word became flesh and dwelt among us. The word became flesh and tabernacled among us. It's an Old Testament concept where here are these people that God has liberated from slavery in Egypt, and as he takes them to their promised home, he says, I want to be with you. They didn't come and say, hey, God, could you come down and be with me? No, he just says, hey, guys, I have this idea. Matter of fact, it's not just an idea. We're going to do it. We're going to bridge the gap between God and man. We're going to create a temple, but all we have is a tent because it needs to be a portable temple. Let's call it a tabernacle. And this is going to be this place where there are priests who come and they offer up sacrifices to bridge this gap, to show people the love and mercy and grace of God, a God who moves first towards people, but a God who will not tolerate the things that we do and feel and think and believe that break other people, that besmirch his name. I don't know where besmirch came from. And he says, what you need is you don't need a God off in the distance. You see, you need a God who moves into the neighborhood. And in Jesus, God moves into the neighborhood. And see, what changes you and me from the inside out is that when you're able to see a God who becomes the tabernacle, when you see Jesus moving into the neighborhood, becoming the place where God and man reconcile, and not only becoming the tabernacle, but becoming the ultimate priest, offering up the ultimate sacrifice of himself so that everything might be reconciled back to God, so that everything that keeps you from being loved by God might be removed, and so now that you might find the freedom to love, when you use the brain that God gave you, the brain that wants to fight so hard against simple faith, when you allow yourself the gift of divine simplicity and to say, this is who he is, and I don't have to shut off my brain, but as I figure out all the complexities of life, I can see a man who died on a cross to forgive my sins and to love his enemies, including me, that changes me. That makes me able to not feel like I have to oppress in order to maintain control, and it frees me and emboldens me to stand up against oppression. This is the gift that God has given us. God has moved into the neighborhood. into the place where we are and the place where we live, in this room, in this neighborhood, and where you'll go and do work this week, and every place we go, God has moved into the neighborhood and he is inviting us to go with him. With the empowering, clarifying grace of Jesus that enables us to both stand against oppression and gives us the humility to never become the oppressor.